pricing should be a key priority for every entrepreneur.
Herzlich willkommen zu meinem Podcast Punkt Genau. Heute die 59. Ausgabe. Ich bin Simir Fersadi, Ihr Interim Manager für Finanzen, Rechnungswesen und Controlling und Ihr Podcast-Host. Und auch heute wieder eine Bitte in eigener Sache. Wenn Ihnen der Podcast gefällt, dann hinterlassen Sie mir doch ein Abo auf den üblichen Plattformen oder schreibe mir eine Rezension. Ja, und heute begrüße ich einen Gast, der 21 Jahre Berufserfahrung hat, 300 Pricing-Projekte hinter sich gebracht hat, Projekte in 40 Ländern und mehr direkt vor Ort abgewickelt hat. Er ist ein Keynote-Speaker, ein Autor zahlreicher Veröffentlichungen, darunter das Buch Revenue Management in Manufacturing. Auch über sein neuestes Buch reden wir heute. Und er ist ein internationaler angesehener Experte und gefragter Mann vor Ort in den Unternehmen. Wir haben uns darüber verständigt, dass wir den Podcast heute auch in Englisch abwickeln und durchführen. Eine große Herausforderung für mich selber natürlich an dieser Stelle. Deswegen kurzer Switch auf das Englische und dann gehen wir auch mitten in Medias Res. A very warm welcome to my podcast, Punkt Genau. Today we have the 59th session and we have a guest, Mr. Daniele Sutter, a leading expert in top line growth. He is specialized in proof improvement and the revenue side with extensive experience in pricing. He has published over 20 books on topics including corporate strategies and pricing, as well as many articles in various countries. His book, The Pricing Model Revolution, is an international bestseller, translated into 12 languages. He is a regular speaker and chairman at events, forums, and leading business school. A very warm welcome, Daniele. Nice to have you here.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Daniele, it is usual in our podcast that we start a little bit with the trickiest questions or sentences to fulfill. Well, let me have my first question to you. What is your first choice if you could choose a restaurant?
I love windsurfing, great beaches and the sea. Therefore, if I could choose, I would go to Porto Pollo on the island of Sardinia at a place called Il Ristorantino, where you find excellent fish and you sit on the beach with a beautiful sea view.
And next one, where did you go to school and what was your worst school subject?
I made joint venture between a German mother from Cologne and an Italian father from Venice and grew up in Rome, where I attended the German School of Rome. My worst subject was chemistry. I never had a passion for this topic. I preferred sports as a school subject, but also mathematics or languages like French and English.
Thanks for that insight. And next one, what do people believe you can, but actually you cannot?
Probably writing perfectly in Spanish. I learned Spanish at university and currently have a number of clients and assignments in Spain. I speak Spanish, but my Spanish writing skills are rusty. Google Translate helps here when I need to write longer mails.
And it leads me to another topic. You are from Italian origin, more or less, 50-50. And Italian and Spanish are not too far away, isn't it?
Yeah, quite similar languages, so this makes life easy.
Now we are living in times of ChatGPT. A huge discussion occurred when Altman was pushed out and then he joined again and whatever. But everybody on this planet has a first experience with ChatGPT. What was your first thing that you have typed into the bot?
It was a recommendation letter and it really worked well. I indicated keywords for the recommendation and ChatGPT wrote a great recommendation in a couple of segments. It's really a great tool.
Yeah, it's also in my experience and I use it also for my daily business. And at least getting into a professional topic, what do you think about meetings that last over 60 or nearly 60 minutes?
I think that these are twice as long as normal working sessions. My working day is fragmented into 30-minute sessions, often also 25, to allow few minutes between meetings. A 60 meeting would be more than typical when I meet clients for the first time or present a proposal to them. Otherwise, 30 minutes would be the norm.
I heard somebody who said, what is not said in 50 minutes couldn't be better in 60 minutes, isn't it?
Good point. I like it.
looking a little bit in your education, it becomes evident that you studied a lot from university to MBA and PhD. What was your motivation on that?
As the English say, there is always room for improvement. And this applies also to education. There is always something to learn. I therefore wanted to complete an MBA to deep dive different topics like marketing and build up an international network after my university studies in Italy and Ireland. I was lucky I was admitted at INSEAD and spent time in France and Singapore after having gathered a number of years of working experience. And I also have a passion for revenue management and pricing. So I decided to combine this interest with a PhD on these topics and completed at the Technical University of Munich my PhD. I do not regret these choices and can only recommend it.
I have been in Singapore in 1992 for a practical, for a trainingship at the Deutsche Bank. I was there. I was for 4 months. I don't know. What was your time when you have been in Singapore?
It was around 2002.
Ah, okay. 10 years later. So a lot of things changed, but I enjoyed it over there very much. How was your impression?
It's
over
a great city, thriving and developing. Really a great opportunity. And then when I was there at the beginning of the year, so January, February, March, when the colleagues in France were under the rain, I was laying on the beach and enjoying the sun.
and the most impressive thing that I have, I really remember, and it takes over in both of us, certainly a smile, driving with a taxi driver and getting this English. Yeah, that was really funny. Sometimes people... looking back and say, I have better done things a little bit different from now, looking on side that. But looking back, what would you have done differently if you joined this kind of thinking?
I started my career as a generalist management advisor. This means I worked on cost-cutting projects, mergers and acquisitions, process optimization, and supply chain for a couple of years before focusing on top-line topics. If I could back, I would have immediately started working as a pricing advisor and not as a generalist. But probably working as a generalist also helped me understanding what I liked and what not.
Let's go into deep now pricing and top-line excellence. Your key profession, and you are focused on that. You are getting from broad general topics to this two areas. Could you please explain us what is the content, what is the definition of pricing and top line excellence in your way of working?
It is about understanding and monetizing the value that a company delivers to its clients. Here an example. If a car producer launches a new vehicle, it is key to understand what will the customers perceive. And with it, what are they willing to pay? I support, in this case, the car manufacturer in identifying value drivers and defining the optimal price for the car. I also help understanding which is the best monetization approach. This means, shall we sell the car for so many euros, or is it better to offer it via subscription or via a pay-per-use revenue model? Many car producers are not wanting to sell cars any longer. Why? Because if they sell you the car for X euros using a transactional model, they will lose the relationship to the client who now owns the car and is gone. This is why producers like Volvo or NIO say, we do not want to sell the car. You get it as a subscription. Like this, we still own the car and we keep the relationship to the driver and can cross and upsell products and services along all his life cycle. Another thing I do is also to optimize after sales. For example, the spare parts pricing of automotive producers. I use for this artificial intelligence to optimize prices, taking into account competitive positioning, elasticities, and many other factors. So as you can see, pricing is a cool topic. It is about elaborating strategies to monetize value after you understood where value is coming from. In addition, it is about psychology and behavioral pricing. It's about getting more and more relevant when you want to steer choices of your customers. And it is about innovative technologies like artificial intelligence-based pricing that help EG set prices dynamically.
Okay. You in your understanding, the pricing is a tool to keep in touch. The pricing model is a tool to keep in touch with the customer, is it?
Absolutely. It's also a way to create a sustainable advantage and make sure you monetize what you're delivering.
Okay. A little bit difficult for certain industries, probably. Yeah. For example, food companies like Edeka, or they don't have a connection with the product itself, but and they can't. You have one price, huh? But manufacturers, for example, they could think about certain models. But we came to that topic a little bit later. First of all, what is where do you see the biggest misunderstanding in that?
I see it in price elasticities. Many sales managers overestimate effects of elasticities. They provide discounts thinking that the increased volume coming because of the reduced price will overcompensate the profitability loss. This is seldom the case, ending up with too high discounts and a loss of absolute margins.
And I remember the Jamba. Jamba ringtones, and I think it was around 2000, isn't it? 2000, sometimes the ringtones and the so-called Abo model, where everybody was cheering up and, hey, this is tricky, and we have to pay every month. Today we have Netflix and Amazon and paying every month on that, yeah, and nobody cares. We have the countless subscriptions to the Netflix, and nobody really cares about that. But a mechanical engineer can hardly offer subscriptions like that, isn't it? Could you give us a little bit insight of your experience in that?
No, also manufacturing companies are now changing their monetization approaches. As described in my book, The Pricing Model Revolution, now also available in German. Take the example of the leading German machine producer, Trumpf. They recently introduced what they call equipment as a service. You can pay a subscription and can use the machine. Or look at another leading machine manufacturer called Heidelberger Druck. You do not purchase the machine any longer, but you pay based on how much the machine is printing for you. Why are these new monetization models being offered? The reason is that our clients' needs are changing, and with them, we need to be prepared to better capture the value that they perceive. In some cases, not all your clients' needs to be addressed with new price models, but maybe for some segments, new price models can become a decisive source of competitive advantage. Here, one more example of a machine producer. Imagine you are a CEO of a premium producer of dishwashers. Your clients are large hotels or restaurant chains. You sell the machines for a high price in a transactional model, getting so much money and handing over the property of the machine. You are a hidden champion, growing in a market niche globally. However, at some point, your target market is saturated. It becomes hard to grow further. So you search for new growth opportunities. What you find is a new target segment, cool and young entrepreneurs opening small bars and cafes. These might be in ski resorts or next to beautiful windsurfing spots, like the northern part of the island Sardinia, where I was windsurfing this summer. The problem is that you are a premium and too expensive for these small entrepreneurs. In addition, many of their bars and restaurants are only open in the winter or summer season. So why shall they pay a high fixed price for only, e.g., 6 months of use? You question yourself, how can I maintain the premium and sell to this new target segment? Hear what the company Winterhalter did. They offered a pay-per-wash pricing model. You as a pub owner pay only for the washing cycle, which is what you want. You get the machine, it is installed, you get washing powder, as well the spare parts, all this without being charged. However, you pay 300 euros for so much washing cycles. This allowed Winterhalter to win new clients, grow profitably, and maintain the premium. They were so successful that they have been copied.
Oh, thank you for this insight. Hopefully, people are thinking a little bit creative after this insight, so that they come along to the idea to think about their pricing models. But another topic in addition to that formerly heard sales activity is the problem with the stocks in the warehouse. The topic is there during the Corona pandemic, we have had problems with the delivery chain. We had a little bit topics there over there, and the prices were higher because only a few deliverers were available on the market, and then they popped up the prices to make a little bit more profit than before. Then they dropped down again after the delivery change were running again. But at least, how can companies effectively communicate customer value to justify their price increases? Because after the Corona pandemic, we have seen not so dropped downs in prices. The prices are still a little bit high. And the problem is to justify the price increases against the customers. And how do you think should they help the customer to understand the added value?
2 points are key here, value and fairness. If you want to increase prices, the best way to do this is to offer higher value. More value commands higher willingness to pay. During and after Corona, prices went up, in some cases exploded. This is not linked to value. Still, customers accepted higher prices as they understood that costs went up and they had limited choice. Higher prices were seen as justified by exploded costs and were therefore still okay. However, if a company increases prices only because of a temporary offer shortage, taking advantage of its dominant position, customer will see it as unfair and walk away as soon as there is an alternative. This is why price fairness and value should always be in focus when setting prices.
We are rushing through the cash flow, through the profit and loss statement and the balance sheet a little bit, and we come to the cash flow and receivables, two positions that are very interesting also for me as a finance guy who is always coming, getting is a cash flow show for the next time. One thing that also leads to liquidity is the realization of the receivables, especially that the invoices are paid on time. And what is your approach there? What can entrepreneurs do better here?
The magic words here are terms and conditions. If you are an entrepreneur and sell, for example, consumer goods to retailers, you should never provide a discount without a counterperformance. This means that you would tell to the Aldis and Lidls of this work, you can get an extra 2% discount, but you have to pay me earlier. Like this, I ensure my liquidity and you get rewarded with a discount. Please avoid to just give an additional 2% discount without asking for a counterperformance.
We are rushing to the next point of the balance sheet, the inventories and warehousing. That also has a connect to pricing. What ideas and impulses do you have here that medium-sized companies should think about?
Again, magic words are here, terms and conditions. Let's take the mentioned example of an entrepreneur selling consumer goods to retailers like Aldi or Lidl. Here you would say you can get an extra 2% discount, but you have to order a full truckload. Like this, I reduce my supply chain costs and you get rewarded with a discount. Again, please avoid to just give an additional 2% discount without asking for a counter performance.
Now we are getting to your latest published book, The 10 Rules of Highly Effective Pricing, that was recently published. And you are a globally recognized expert on the subject of pricing. Let me say that, even if you don't want to hear it. But what was your motivation to add another book over here on that topic? And what was your motivation to write this? And what is different here than in your first book, The Pricing Model Revolution? What is the difference? Can you give us then a little bit insight of your personal side and what has changed in between this years?
To be honest, my editor, Wiley, motivated to quickly publish this second book. The reason was that my first book that you mentioned, The Pricing Model Revolution, became an unbelievable success. It was really unexpected. It became a pricing bestseller, available as hardcover, audiobook, and ebook, and also translated into a dozen of languages, and also endorsed by leading CEOs and prominent professors. While the first book deals with how to find the new source of competitive advantage in pricing, the second book deep dives the way you transform your company to increase profitability via pricing excellence. So these are two totally different topics that shed light on two key areas for corporate success. What the two books have in common is the style. They are not academic and contain no formulas or graphs. These are not technical books. They are business books, full of case studies, examples, and anecdotes. The target readers are also not pricing experts, but rather managers who are not familiar with pricing.
I have seen a lot of really powerful people in the CFO side and in huge companies that are reading your books. And I'm really astonished about that, that they have the time to read books. It is not a two-pager or something. It is... How many sizes has this book already?
220. So it's indeed a great honor to see CEOs of global corporations dedicating their time. And probably this is due to the fact that pricing, maybe compared to 10 years ago, has become a key topic on the agenda of CEOs. Because you have inflation, you have volatile raw materials, willingness to pay is changing, you have new revenue models. So it's really a priority in many companies. And this is also the reason why, for example, many companies are establishing the function of pricing with the pricing director leading this. So it's really a new development that puts a lot of emphasis on pricing.
What I realized also is a quote of Warren Buffett. You have written down this one. If you are able to raise prices without losing sales, you have a very good business model. Then Warren said also, and if you have to pray before prices are increased by 10%, my business model is terrible. Danilo, what motivated you to this quote?
Well, the message here is pricing should be a key priority for every entrepreneur. If you can raise prices, this means that you deliver value and clients are willing to pay for it. Your business is strong and distinctive. But if you cannot increase prices, this means that you offer a commodity where you miss distinctive elements. This brings low prices and low margins. This is not a great business.
Yeah, should everybody think about that and reflect. We have also scratched a little bit on the industry thing. Well, Jamba was... 40 years, no, not 40, but 25 years ago, the first runner. Are there specific industries or companies that are particularly innovative in terms of their pricing models?
There are many industries and companies doing great things on the pricing model side. The book, The Pricing Model Revolution, is full of case examples on these. Here, a case of a comedy theater. Imagine you sell fun comedies. You sell the entrance to the theater for 35 euros. Spectators arrive at the theater, pay the entrance price, and then they enjoy the comedy. Suddenly, taxes on theater prices are increased. Also, your prices increase. Spectators stay away. You massively lose revenues. You start generating losses. You risk to go out of business. But the quality of your commodities did not change. They still provide a lot of value and entertain spectators who laugh and enjoy the shows. Your problem is the price model. So the question is, how can you change your price model to monetize the value delivered and become profitable again? Here the solution by a company in Spain, Pay Per Laugh. You pay when you laugh. Each seat was fitted with a facial recognition device. And when you laugh, you pay. If you do not laugh, you pay nothing. This is a very innovative way to monetize, and the case described in the book.
We have here a case that is can also be transferred to a lot of companies, I think. And the greatest challenge, I assume, is to get this into their minds to transfer the change, because the sales guys always watch on their own pocket, in my experience also, honestly. They want to have the provision and a provision on a monthly basis. So sale is a little bit lower than on a huge sale that I've done once. Huh? And so it is a little bit, it is the change challenge.
That's a very good observation. It's also about calibrating and preparing the organization to a new price model. In this case, you also need to align incentive systems for the sales reps. Very, very well stated.
Well, let's talk about a little bit of the risks, because also in risk, if you're looking about the risk a little bit higher level, associated with innovative pricing models, what should companies keep their eye on?
Well, if you do things right, there are no major risks, because you test those models and offer them to specific customer segments, avoiding to put at risk your entire customer base. This allows to ensure that they work well before you roll them out. So you need to test them, review the organizational incentive systems, and so on. If all this homework is done, then you're on the safe side.
I will take the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about your feelings into the future, not about politics and whatever. We are now talking about pricing. How do you see the future of pricing models, especially in relation to the ever-changing business environment and technological developments?
There will be more and more new pricing models popping up. Transactional price models will belong to the past. In the book, The Pricing Model Revolution, I describe 10 models, but you can also mix them and create hybrid ones. Then you have artificial intelligence and machine learning, who will accelerate the way companies monetize their products and services, because they become better in tracking and measuring value. This opens up immense new pricing model scenarios, so we will expect much more in the future to come.
What are the three key bullet points that urgently need to be worked out in every company?
Every company should keep in mind and work on these three key points. Pricing is not only the quickest, it is also the strongest profit lever. Make sure pricing is on top of the CEO agenda. Innovative price models are the new source of competitive advantage. Make sure to develop and propose new price models to create a distinctive competitive advantage. And last, value pricing sits on paper if value selling is missing. Make sure that your organization can articulate and defend value.
Thank you very much for your content, your insights. In the name of all listeners, thank you very much for all this.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.